Family, my name is Mark, and I'm an addict.
Yes,
and I've been blessed with the gift of recovery. And I don't say that lightly, because to say that I'm an addict and then to be able to have the opportunity to recover is a blessing. Because it's a long way from an oil joint with my neck stretched out with a blue head needle in it to stand at this podium clean. My clean date is November 7th, 2001, and it's only by it's God's mercy that I'm able to be here. When I say that, it is not a joke. Mercy is what I need. I couldn't stand justice. I needed mercy, because when you know you're wrong, I knew I was wrong. And it wasn't even about the grace at that point. It was just simply mercy. God, please don't give me what I deserve. Because what I deserved was a life sentence. I deserved a godless existence, because that was the path that I was on. And when I'm asked to do this topic, the mask must go. It's really, for real, I really don't like this topic, because I'm more comfortable in a mask. In fact, this is my time of night. Yes, man. This when the mask goes on. You understand? So I'm now put in a position where the mask must go at midnight. And what I'm talking about is I'm the guy, I like to party. I like them a certain way. And when I see them, I get focused and I lose all trend of thought and the mask comes on. And I begin to behave contrary to recovery principles. But I'm still clean. But I'm living dirty. That's why I need a lot of help, man, and I'm glad, man, that I'm in a place where it's safe, like Narcotics Anonymous. I'm a native of Washington, D.C. I'm raised primarily by my grandparents. My grandparents did the best they could to bring me up and instill in me the principles that would cause me to be a productive citizen of society. And my mother was a young mother. She did the best she could. And I'm the only child. And as a direct result of that, I had good education, good upbringing, got a lot of good exposure. But for some reason, I was attracted to a different lifestyle. And I was never comfortable with being who God had really ordained me to be. I just wasn't comfortable with being that person. And I began to gravitate toward the guys that were doing the things very opposite to the way I was raised. And it's funny, man, because I always lived up to other people's expectations, and everybody wanted something from Mark. Everybody saw something greater in Mark, but Mark was never able to see the greatness in himself. And I never really knew what I wanted. I only followed what I was told to do. And when I got big enough to do what I really wanted to do, it was totally contrary to what my family and those that loved me really wanted me to do. And I began, I went through school and got a good education and got exposed to some great stuff and had some great opportunities and all of that. But, I failed. And when I failed, I came back to D.C. and I gravitated back toward the dudes that were doing the very thing that I was going to school to get away from. And they were snorting dope and shooting dope and doing all kind of other stuff. And I ended up doing that. So I learned early to pretend to be something that I wasn't. I remember when I would go into an oil joint, they would say, "Man, you don't look like you no dope fiend." So immediately my mind said, "Well, Mark, you got to prove that you a real dope fiend." What I love about recovery is not performance based. It's not performance based. I don't have to perform in here in order to get anyone's approval. I can be exactly where I am. This is what y'all told me. Mark, you're right where you're supposed to be. You don't have to be anywhere else. You be right where you are. And stay on this path and keep recovering one day at a time. And so it's not about how high I jump or how fast I run. You know what I mean? It's about my peace, and so I don't have to perform. And I'm glad I didn't, because in that lifestyle, I felt like I had to perform. I had to do something. I had to jump through hoops. So I put on these masks, and I pretended to be somebody that I really wasn't. And man, I stunted all the way to death's door. I stunted all the way to death's door. I'm going to fast forward because, you know, I remember, man, I had done time. I was locked up. I got out, and I said, Lord, if you get me out of this one, I ain't going to never do that again. And that was my prayer, you know, and by the grace of God, I got out. And, of course, I did the very thing that I said I wasn't going to do. And you know, I remember I went to my man's house and said, man, something ain't right. They said, I said, oh, man, go ahead on back to your house. You know, I'll be back in an hour. And that night, I got hit 7 times. 5 times in my chest and stomach and twice in my back. It was really a mess. There's no human explanation as to why I'm standing here. And the surgeon literally told my mother that legally he could have pronounced me DOA. But something told him to work on me. And she kissed that doctor's hands and said, these are God's hands. And it took me a whole calendar year to recover from all of the trauma. And, you know, trauma is a heck of a thing. You know, trauma does something to me psychologically. It does something to me emotionally. It does something to me mentally. And it does something to me physically. But I didn't understand all that was going on at the time. But a calendar year to get better. To a point where I could stand on my own. I had one of them breathing tubes in my mouth. I was strapped down. I was morphined up. I right now I cannot have an MRI because I have metal still in my body. I had these bars in my chest and stomach holding me together. They thought they were going to have to amputate this right leg. They saved my leg through a process called a fasciotomy. Just a wreck of trauma. And do you know, after a year, I went right back to the dude's house I left that night. And I stretched my neck out. And I said, boy, can you get that? And he got it. And I went out. And, you know, ODing is a heck of a thing. But anyway, the point is that the nurse that was one of the EMT nurses, she was actually in the hospital at the time that I was born in, and she said to me, she was also in the ambulance, she said, son, do you realize what it took to save your life? And I really didn't. You know, I really didn't realize. So, you know, if you all are anything like me, and y'all say we're more alike than different, then that's a very profound question. Do you know what it took to save your life, Mark? What it takes to continuously save your life, Mark? And my solution was drink meth, shoot dope. Man, if I could just everything is gonna be all right. And in the end, because you know, our literature says very few addicts have ever had this last choice. Very few have ever had this last choice. And we're talking about the mask must be removed. It says it must be removed. That on the outside, I appear attractive and confident, but on the inside, I'm really hiding a shaky, insecure individual. I'm hiding on the inside of what you all appear to see, what appears to be the case. But I'm telling you, it's not the case. What you see ain't necessarily what you get. And all you got to do is be with me for a long time and you'll see that these masks begin to come off and the real Mark begin to show up, and I'm often not who I say I am. And I'm trying to learn how to line my words up to my footprints. Because that's what I was told, Mark. That's when you showed up recovering, when your walk matches your talk. And that's a lot of growth, and that's a lot of work, and that's a lot of practice. And y'all say, people don't get good at this stuff overnight. It takes practice. So I've been practicing, and I'm still practicing. And, in the end, I was in a hole in my pulse with a blue head trying to get it to catch. It caught, it was pink blood. I ran it anyway, because I'm like the brother that shared earlier, desperate. I'm a desperate addict. You know what I mean? I ran it anyway, and my body was on fire. And what I didn't know was that a section of my intestine had literally collapsed. And I wasn't having bowel movements. And the mask must go. And back to the hospital again, my surrender comes hard. The doctor says, son, we can save you. This was about to happen. The bowel is going to explode in your body. If it explodes, you're going to die. But we can save you. But if you keep living the way you're living, you're going to die anyway. And my man, my partner in crime, who had been clean 5 years, who had changed people, places, and things, who had started to take some of his mask off and confront the real person on the inside, and came to my hospital bed and said, man, you know, when you get on your feet, I'm going to take you somewhere. And he took me to my first meeting. And all of my Lawton experiences, all of the stuff that I've been through, I am what's called a career criminal. You go from a college student to becoming a career criminal. That wasn't my major, crime. But I became that. That was another mask. You know, I masked up to break the law. I was committed. You hear me? I was committed to breaking the law. And so to come here, to be here, man, in this place, clean, alive, free from active addiction, not under the compulsion and obsession to want to use, not under the compulsion and obsession to want to destroy myself, to understand and have done some work through sponsorship and grand sponsorship to see that I do have some value, that there's a place for Mark. Man, it's a long stretch, man. And I am so, so grateful, man. They brought me to the meeting and y'all said, man, any addict can stop using. Lose the desire and find a new way to live. And man, I bought in, because I was washed up. And it wasn't about me losing nothing. It was about my life. The most precious thing I have, this breath that I breathe. You know, to be able to breathe life unobstructedly to you know, talking about these masks, what's so interesting is that, you know, in doing step work and looking at the fact that I'm more comfortable with telling a lie than the truth. You know, that I'm more comfortable with being deceitful than being honest. Because I don't like the way it feels to be vulnerable. You know, coming into a meeting and raising my hand and saying that I need some help was probably one of the hardest lessons that I learned. And 9 out of 10 times what happened to me is my worst experiences in recovery were the most life-changing and eye-opening experiences that I had, where the mask was, it was almost like it was God was surgically removing it. You know, when I cheated, when I got caught up in that triangle. I remember being at a convention one time, and I had 3. And it was all, and I'm trying to play it off and act like, you know. And man, I'm caught up. Somebody might be caught up right now. Somebody got a mask on right now. Don't be looking at me like that. I don't know your name. I'm just saying. Y'all say we more alike than different. I know what we do. I know what I did. And man, I got busted out. And I, you know, it's one thing to get busted out in private. But it's another whole thing when you get busted out in public. And then when you get totally humiliated. Y'all ever seen the Flintstones when Fred, when Gazoo shrunk Fred? Fred was about this big. Steering wheel was like, that's how I felt. You know, and man, you know, but having to come clean. You know, there was a freedom in coming clean. There was a freedom in it. I can't explain it, but there was a freedom. But this daddy guy, my back had to be on the wall. I've had the distinct honor of going back in clean. Going back across R&D's table. You know, jail is a part of my story. And not because I broke the law, I was trying to hustle in recovery, because I know nobody don't do that. People don't hustle in recovery. You know, either you in recovery or you not in recovery, Mark. But I was in recovery and I had a warrant that stemmed from a parole violation that I didn't know anything about. When I was on parole, but they said I was still on parole. If they say you're on parole, Mark, then you're on parole. And I'm going to tell you, man, when I learned about it, all my everything kicked up. I was peeping out the window. I was, oh, my God. You know, everybody looked like the feds. I just seen, you know, everything. You know, but no one in recovery told me, Mark, run. They said, Mark, face it. And the way God would have it is, you know, God said he don't do nothing to you, Mark. He does things for you. I had been here long enough. At that time, I had been here 10 years. And I had been here long enough to establish relationships with people in recovery. Relationships with people in the community through service work. Right? Where people came to my aid. They could speak to my character. I stayed in 8 days. And I got the opportunity to walk through them cells and walk through that experience clean. And it felt just like it felt when I was using, but there was a difference. I wasn't using. And I saw guys that said, man, I remember this one guy, he was facing a whole rack of time. He had one arm and one leg and some gunplay. He said, man, all I can think about is going to a meeting. Another guy, myself, the guy that came in my cell, he had done 22 or something like that and came back facing life. So I said, oh my God. But for the grace of God, that's me. You know, so it's no real human explanation. So when you talk about these masks, you know, what I'm learning is that God loves me. He's the only one I know that invests in broken stuff. You know, that invested, because anybody else, you know, they don't mess with nothing that's going down. And I was going down. But God took the time, and I'm saying God because that's my story. That's where my faith lies. That's what has been keeping me, and what is, and that's why each and every one of you all that are in my life are in my life because of God orchestrating this process. It's not through osmosis. It's not through my intellect. It's not through my limited understanding. I'm not making these connections. These connections are being made for me. I'm just a willing participant in this thing called life. And man, I've been you know, value's been added. I'm a father. I'm 58 years old. In fact, the main speaker that opened up, Walston B., you know, we share the same birthdays. We celebrate together, in fact. You know, where do you come and meet four guys that have, you all have the same birthday? And anyway, I'm 58 years old. I have one son, and he's three now. And that is truly a miracle. And you know, I guess, you know, man, you keep on firing. And that's no disrespect. I'm just saying that, man, you know, I never saw that coming. And this little boy is literally amazing. But I'm talking about the mask must go. You know, the image is, Mark, you don't want, you know, father, you doing your thing. That's the image. Hey, player. Hey, my main man. But for real, God is trying to move me into a different position. Fatherhood. You know, that means that I'm carrying something that that little boy, in fact, he needs everything. He needs everything, but I'm learning so much from him. And the problem with Mark is that Mark resists. I don't even know, man, let me tell you something. I don't even know what I need. Let me just be clear on that. I don't even know what I need. My intellect and my ego will tell me there's some things that I need. There's some tangible things that I need. But man, no, none of that stuff really, really do it for me because I get bored very fast. I lose interest very fast. I put on a left signal and turn right just like that. I can be very inconsistent. The only consistent thing I've done is stay clean one day at a time. But this little boy is demanding from me. He's putting a demand on my spirit to grow up. And I'm telling you, man, I fight it. I fight as good as it is. It's a part of me that resists the goodness. That'll wallow in complacency. That's all right with settling. They will never reach. Because sometimes I just don't know what it is I want. And I admire you people that know exactly what you want. And how you gonna get it. My sponsor tells me, man, just, you know, one of my predecessors said, man, just jump out the window. Hell, you old. Jump out the window. Go for it. And you know, because I'll be like this. You understand? So, but yeah, he said one day to him, he said, Daddy, be happy. Just to hear them words. You know, Daddy. I never saw that Daddy be happy. He's telling me to be happy. And why, Mark, aren't you happy? Mark isn't happy because he's so caught up in what's the future, what might be, what could be, what's going to be, or either what has been. But we were on the floor playing with trucks and buses, and he's saying, man, take off your mask and be happy. So, you know, that's profound to me. That really is profound. I'm learning, you know, that it's not the physical mask. It's the mask around my heart. You know, learning how to let the good in. And then learning how to give the good out. You know, and God is willing to work with me. You know, and I'm not sure if I really touched this subject thoroughly or not, but I just want to, you know, I want to thank all of my predecessors, you know what I mean? I want to thank everyone that was here before me, that kept the door open, that had a moment of silence for the still suffering addict, that said a prayer, you understand, that reached out, you know, because, you know, we are so, so powerful, man. We are, the spirit that's in these rooms, it's just for now. I heard the brother sharing about church. You know, I love church. I do. I love church. I love that dynamic that happens in church, but it does not compare to the relationships that I have formed and made with individuals in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. There are people in here that know me intimately, that have seen my process, that have held my hand, that have loved me in spite of me, masked up and all. My home group is Men's Rep in D.C. And I have another home group, Monday Night Steps, 1 through 12. And I have a sponsor, a grand sponsor, and you know, a few gentlemen that refer to me as sponsor. And Man, I have never experienced life like this. You know, I've had the chance to do things that I never thought that I would be able to do clean. But most of all, I sleep at night. I sleep at night. I don't wake up ill. Ain't nobody looking for me. I ain't got to look over my shoulder. I'm going to share this last thing. I was in a store and they left the, in fact, my grandma's was right outside. The guy left the whole register sitting right there with all the money at the end of the day, tilled up, money wrapped up and everything, ready to go. Everybody on that end of the store, I'm on this end with the register. Sitting right there, all that money right there. I said, good God Almighty. But that wasn't my first thought. I said, good, that's change. Because when I was using it, the opportunity, good, what? Cameras or no cameras? Man, I'm looking at forensic files and all that. So I said, boy, you got to be real crazy to try to break. Man, they got some science out here for your behind. So my man told me, he said, Mark, it's better on this side, but I can't come over there and get you. You got to want to come over here. And I'm so glad that God had mercy on me to allow me to come over here to have lived that life and then have an opportunity to live this life one day at a time. Thanks for letting me share.